Well, as you can see, Paul and I are doing a series on parables, and we just so appreciate the resources that you have gifted us with in order to complete these studies. Today's parable, again, from the book of Matthew, it's actually found sandwiched between two other parables that have to do with sowing of the fields. Each one is prefaced with the words, "The kingdom of heaven is like." Now, prior to this particular parable is the one that we know about, the parable of the sower who goes down and he sows the seed, and some are fruitful and some are not, etc. And following this, what we call the tares and wheat parable, Jesus addresses the parable of the mustard seed, having faith the size of a mustard seed. Now, a message could easily be spent contrasting all three of these. However, today we simply want to focus on this particular one because this one may not receive as much focus as some we may be accustomed to. So again, we want to thank you, Marlene, for reading that and filling in for Dave today. Let's start and begin by focusing on two particular questions. One, how do we deal with evil? And that's a question for every age, for every day. So it's a good question to consider. And more precisely, as you look at the title, the second question is, how do we get rid of evil without destroying the good? And the parable of the wheat and tares addresses this particular question, just as the disciples had for Jesus during their day. But before diving into the interpretation of the parable, I would like us to look at the word tare for its historical background. Now, if you look at the word tare, spelled T-A-R-E, as you see, as a noun, it's not the same as the verb T-E-A-R, meaning to rip something apart. A tare, T-A-R-E, is a weed. And as you look at the definition of a weed, and as my earrings fly off my head, whatever, right? Not just any weed, it's not just any weed, it is a very poisonous weed. And it contaminates the good wheat. It is a purposefully injurious weed. That is the definition of a tare. So now we understand why the disciples were so concerned, right? I mean, all of us raise gardens or flowers, and we have some weeds, and some weeds we let go, and other weeds we know to be quite injurious.
Now let's consider the historical context of this story by comparing it to today's farmers. Now, I grew up on the farm. We didn't do much in the way of wheat, but we did spelts. Spelts and wheat, not very much the same. As we know, the sowing of wheat and killing of weeds includes pesticides. So we may need to make a bit of shift in thinking as we consider this parable and interpret it as the land was in Jesus' day. And even today, when you go over to Palestine and Israel, they have scarce land. Their farms are very small, and their tracts are so small. Therefore, sowing and reaping was done by hand, and a lot of it is still done by hand today. Jesus' parable states in verses 24 and 25, that a man sowed wheat, the good grain, and then he fell asleep, and he had an enemy who came in and sprinkled the seed of the tare. And you really couldn't tell it apart when it first comes up. As the wheat and the weeds grew, discerning servants recognized that, yeah, there were weeds in there as well as wheat. So something was wrong, and they went to the farmer to let him know. After a survey of the field, the farmer agreed with the servants that an enemy had come and tried to ruin him. had come in and sowed wheat and sowed weed. What should the farmer do? Well, he should go in the fields, perhaps. But can you imagine, if you've ever worked around wheat at all, wheat just comes up everywhere. So if you're to go in there and put your knees down to try to pick out the weeds, you'd be squashing the wheat plants as well. So the farmer said, there's only one thing that we can do. Let them both grow, the weeds and the wheat, until harvest. And at harvest time then, I'll tell the reapers to do this. Gather the weeds first and bind them up and burn them. But gather the wheat and put it into my barn.
In the parable, we can easily see God as the farmer, allowing the evil and the good to mix in the world. But hopefully we as God's servants can discern the good from the evil, but it's not always easy, is it? The danger we fall into that the parable is pointing out is that if we choose to call judgment on one and we make too much of an effort or a stink to eradicate what we believe as evil, much good is often trampled, as Paul stated. Oftentimes, much good is eradicated. Oftentimes, trust is ripped out, and sometimes, friendships fail. And what happens to unity? It turns into disharmony. I love this particular story I ran into as we studied this particular parable. So I want us to move more into a contemporary stage. As we listen to this truth of evil and good that is found oftentimes intertwined. Well, in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, we're all familiar with where Harrisburg is, a man called Harold Bosley witnessed a mother with her two sons. Now, they happened to be studying a huge painting of Pickett's Charge at the Battle of Gettysburg during the Civil War. Do we have any Civil War fans here? Any Civil War fans? Now, maybe you have even seen this museum piece, this huge piece of Pickett's Charge depicting the Battle of Gettysburg. Now, as Harold stood gazing at this particular image, are we all okay? Okay, so as Harold is gazing at this image, he overhears the older son talking to the mother. And he asks the mother, as he's looking at, and he goes, "Mom, which are the good guys and which are the bad guys?" And the mother replied softly, "Well, it's hard to tell." And the younger boy asked, "Well, why are they trying to kill each other?" Now, the mother briefly explained the issue of slavery and other troubles that the country was having at that particular time. But regardless, the boys were persistent in their questioning. "Did they have to fight?" the eldest asked. Well, the mother's replied, show a mark of wisdom. "Well, they seem to think so," she said.
Harold Bosley then, in reflection of this interaction between mother and sons, went on to write a book entitled, He Spoke to Them in Parables. The mother's reply to her sons displayed a gentleness that an interval of 100 years has made. Gone was the sharp divide of the country, the harshness of sharp judgment. In its place was an awareness, not only of the evil of slavery, but also equally of the great evil of what only could be called the will to misunderstand, to misrepresent, and to misjudge people who disagree with us. This lesson is still applicable today, isn't it? How many times do we witness revengeful acts only to realize that two wrongs do not make a right? A little bit different than math. You take a negative times a negative, you get a positive. But when we're looking at relationships, one wrong plus another wrong doesn't make something right. So let's further explore how to get rid of evil without destroying good. First, we must continue to face the fact that both good and evil exist, which is why we spent 6 weeks focusing on the battlefield of the mind, to know how and when to reprogram our thinking so that we don't end up in the wilderness as the Israelites did under Moses.
Secondly, once we anchor our knowledge of who God is and who we are in relationship to Him as individuals, as a church, we stand as a lighthouse to the world. And so many of you are so unaware of what a lighthouse you individually stand. Those who are outside the church, you know, we bump along folks all the time. And they go, oh, you go to Lincolnshire. And they go, oh, is so-and-so there and so-and-so there, yeah? And they will literally use that word, that person or persons were a lighthouse for my life. So I want you to know what an impact you make. Reverend G. Raymond Carlson once stated, the church is a shining light in the darkness. It stands as a bulwark, as a fortress against the onslaughts of evil, which seeks to engulf the world. Our hope as individuals, our hope as a church, is that we stand as a refuge, not as a court of law. For we are all strange mixtures of wheats and tares. And isn't that kind of a fun way to see ourselves? Wheats and tares, and to ask God to remove the tares in our lives. So we have to be patient with one another as we step along life's journey together. We need to place our focus on the wheat and not on the tares within each other's lives. And not just here in the church, but outside the church, in our family relationships, in our neighborhoods, etc. Yes, we recognize the tares. We see potential evil. We see what may not be right. But what do we cultivate? You cultivate the wheat. The words of Jesus make it clear. Jesus stated, and as you wish that men would do to you, do so to them. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. But love your enemies and do good, and your reward will be great. Be merciful. Even as your Father is merciful, judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put in your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. Luke 6, verses 31 through 39.
And from John chapter 13, verse 34, Jesus said, a new commandment that I give unto you, love one another as I have loved you. Let's review what our tactics are when faced with good and evil intertwined. The first thing, just like the servants did, you have to recognize evil for what it is. You have to know the difference between good and evil. Secondly, carefully count the cost of eradicating all evil. Be careful how much you nitpick or reach too deep to remove a speck in a brother or sister's eye. For we will be held accountable for this. Goodness may be lost with the need to be right or in the need to correct another person or situation. Number three, be patient and loving with one another as God is with us. And number four, use goodness as your antidote for sin and evil in the world. The master gives the order in the parable, leave it alone until the harvest. At the time of the final judgment, the angels will gather up the tares and bind them in bundles in order to burn them. But the angels will gather up the wheat and put it into the barn. We do not need to rush to judgment, nor do we take it into our own hands. Let the harvest time come and trust the Lord.
There's a beautiful hymn whose words go like this, and the hymn is entitled Harvest Home. You may recognize it. Even so, Lord, quickly come. Bring thy final harvest home. Gather thou thy people in, free from sorrow, free from sin, there forever purified in thy presence to abide. Come, with all thine angels, come, raise the glorious harvest home. Amen.